Hey, welcome to a new episode of Skin in the Game. This is your host, John Simperman, with my co-host,
Tim O'Shea. Great to have everybody with us today. And John, I am fresh back from Canada, where I was checking out a Canadian Football League game in preparation for our conversation today.
Well, good timing, because we have the leading historian and author of many, many CFL books, Paul Woods, joining us on Skin in the Game today.
I've been a fan of Paul's writing for quite some time. We'll get into that. He wrote a great book called Year of the Rocket, which takes you back to 1991. We're going to keep today's conversation, man, a little history, a lot more current, but this is a great CFL story that goes back a few decades to when John Candy, Wayne Gretzky, and Bruce McNall, who you did not quite work for in Los Angeles, but the former owner of the LA Kings, bought the Toronto Argonauts. And it's a crazy story, crazy year. Didn't go well in some ways, but it was an experiment that lent itself to a great story that Paul told. And, you know, much more importantly, though, Paul is one of the leading experts, as you said, on what's going on with the CFL today. It's a league with a lot of history, with passionate fans, and a whole lot of struggle, too.
Yeah, and I think the discussion with Paul is super timely with the recently announced partnership between the Buffalo Bills and Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment.
Right, and MLSE owns the Toronto Argonauts, along with, you know, other some perhaps better known big league teams, better known nationally and internationally.
Oh, there's a hockey team too, right?
Yeah. Maple, what are they called? The Maple Leafs.
Right. Yes, that would be them.
Yeah, and you know, you get the Raptors are floating around in the circles there. So MLSE has there's a lot going on between their sports holdings, their arena holdings, their media holdings, and the Argos, which, you know, as we're going to get into, are easily one of the oldest pro sports franchises on the continent, are also part of MLSE. But they're a team and a franchise in a league that has struggled to get new fans and hold on to those fans. And so this partnership with the Buffalo Bills, I think, will be really instructive as to what the CFL is trying to do to get new fans and what the NFL, in particular the Buffalo Bills, are trying to do to expand internationally.
Yeah. Obviously, our listeners in Toronto and Southern Ontario are very aware of MLSE. However, for our listeners here in the States, they're also owned by Rogers Communication. Rogers Communications is the largest telecommunications, broadband, wireless provider in all of Canada. So they've got major backing from, you know, Rogers Communication to really, I think, help hopefully both organizations on both sides of the border, you know, increase their presence, increase their market share. And obviously they wouldn't be doing this if it weren't to also increase revenues.
So I'd like to put John on the spot. You know, he is a sports marketing expert. I am the journalist. So I'd like to throw questions at him that he doesn't know is coming. In the interview with Paul, we'll get into the details of this partnership, but in short, there's going to be co-branded merchandise, a whole lot of youth football initiatives, and, you know, visibility of, you know, big sports names who are connected to the Argos, to the Raptors too, actually, and to the Buffalo Bills, all kind of mixed together to get attention on football in Canada, right? That's the short version of it. If you are the Buffalo Bills and you are opening a new stadium 1 year from now, you want MLSE to be your friends. Right?
Absolutely. They're
easy question for
sure. Include, and as I mentioned, they're owned by the largest media company in Canada.
Right. Why? I mean, why is it? I mean, the NFL is pretty big. The Bills are pretty big. I mean, the Bills are a $5 or $6 billion organization at this point, right?
Yeah.
Why does it matter?
Well, I think it increases their value because it increases their reach. Back in the early days of the NFL, even, you know, a few years back, a team could only own its market within 75 miles of its building. That's really what you were limited to. But in May, the NFL opened that up specifically for the Bills that they can now market in Canada, right? So just think of all the potential for the new fans and the new revenue opportunities. You know, they've multiplied the size of the market Tim, it was probably the 31st largest market. In other words, second smallest market in the NFL.
Yeah, just behind Green Bay.
Now, this puts them in maybe the top 5-6 size of markets. So
yeah, and when
it's
people
a big,
look it
big
up,
deal.
It won't be reflected when people look it up because that invisible, well, it's not really an invisible line now, right? But that line on a map that separates the U.S. and Canada doesn't translate over in market size.
You know, we've talked about this a lot on Skin in the Game. How can we work together with our neighbors up north and really increase benefits for both sides of the border? So, you know, hey, it's starting with football, but maybe it can start, you know, look at other business opportunities and other ways for us to leverage each other's resources.
There's something that a guy who's well known in both countries said to me a long time ago, Jack Armstrong, which depending where you know him from is either the iconic broadcaster for the Toronto Raptors or the former D1 coach at Niagara University who lives in Lewiston, New York. He's well known for both. Jack has said to me is there needs to be this corridor between Buffalo and Toronto where we're not differentiating between the two markets quite so much, but it's one big market where you know both can not only coexist, but one can feed the other.
Sure.
If it works well, this Bills, MLSE, Toronto, Argos partnership could be an example of that. To your point, John, not the only answer. It's got to go well beyond it. And it might be more beneficial for the Argos than the Bills, too. It's hard to know. I'm excited they're going to try to build up youth engagement in football and flag football, presumably.
Yeah.
In Southern Ontario. We'll get into this too in the episode. There's a lot of great, and I can tell you from firsthand experience, a lot of great young football players, flag football players in Southern Ontario. But getting both the Bills and the Argos behind that youth participation is a great thing all on its own.
Well, I don't see a Pagula Sports partnership with the Sabres and the Leafs because we want to keep that rivalry as it is.
Might be interesting.
But also, part of MLSE, they also own the MLS team, the Toronto FC. Is there potentially, and I'm just throwing this out there because, hey, we're on Skin in the Game and we throw out ideas.
We specialize in this.
You know, maybe we see a couple of the Toronto FC games coming to the new Highmark Stadium as a neutral site. You just throw it out there, but this is how you start to brainstorm how can these two organizations work together.
I like how you are thinking there. The other thing I'd love to see, and we've talked about this before, is getting a Raptors game or two down to Buffalo.
I'd love that, even if it's preseason.
I was going to say, and it probably would need to be preseason. I can't imagine there'd be any motivation to move a Raptors regular season game anywhere other than...
Have them play against the Cavaliers, and we're driving some tourism from both Northeast Ohio as well as Toronto. Again, I think that's another slam dunk.
So for the Pagula ownership group, if you can pull that off, John will be doubly happy. But no, it would be a great idea.
And so would the bar owners, hotel owners, and all the hospitality workers in Buffalo who are being able to work on another night with 18,500 people in that building.
Right. And there will, over time, there are going to be renovations happening in that building in KeyBank Center in Buffalo. So, what better to bring in than a little bit of NBA?
Yeah, right. So let's see where
I'm
it goes.
I'm lucky where this could lead.
Hey, let's see where this goes. But it starts, obviously, promoting football. But MLSE has a lot more going for it as far as other teams and other programming that maybe can come this way as well. And with that, we've got to get to our interview. Paul Woods, CFL historian, coming up next on Skin in the Game.
Hey, football fans. Check out the USA Wheelchair Football League Tournament, presented by Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Cheer on our very own Buffalo Bills as they face off with the Patriots, the Cowboys, the Raiders, and the Browns.
Something up. It's picked off.
Head to the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel to stream it now.
Hey, all, welcome back to Skin in the Game. This is Tim O'Shea with John Simperman, and welcome, Paul Woods.
Thank you for having me, gentlemen. It's great to be here.
Paul, we're so excited to have you. And it, John and I have been talking about the Canadian Football League for a while now. You know, and you know, I mean, we're sitting here in Buffalo. We have an audience that's pretty evenly split between the U.S. and especially the, you know, the Northeast and Western New York and Canada, particularly Southern Ontario. And so we've got a lot of listeners and viewers out there who are familiar with the CFL. We've got a lot who aren't. And so, John, I'm thinking a good way to tee this up for you, Paul, is to ask you what might be too broad a question. You know, as you look at the state of Canadian football today, what strike you as the biggest challenges that the league is grappling with right now?
Really, it's the size of the whole thing. It's the Canadian Football League has the same number of teams now, 9, that it had 70 years ago. Every other league and every other pro sport has expanded exponentially over the last 70 years. You know, the CFL at one time had three more teams than the National Hockey League. Now the National Hockey League has 32 teams and they're looking to go to 36, and the CFL is still with 9 teams. The market is small. Canada is not a huge country. We've got a population of about 38 million, I think, the last time I checked, about the size of the state of California. But it's got, you know, in terms of the geographic size, it's bigger than the United States. Almost nowhere the Canadian Football League can expand practically within Canada. It tried expanding to the United States 30 years ago for 3 years. It didn't ultimately succeed. So it sort of has very little growth opportunity. And it's in a sport that is completely dominated in an overwhelming way by the National Football League. It's a popular sport here, but the NFL is also an incredibly popular sport in Canada and is just such a bigger venture financially, bigger spectacle in terms of the way the broadcasts look compared to the broadcasts in Canada. So many of those factors play into the fact. And, you know, for your viewers and listeners in the, you know, New York State, Canada does not have the same kind of sporting culture that the United States does. Sports is not sort of top of mind here the way it is in much of the United States. Fans of the Buffalo Bills would be shocked at how little coverage the Toronto Argonauts get. And I've been jealous for 40 years of the kind of coverage that the Buffalo Bills get. I mean, a Buffalo Bills home game is often the lead item on every newscast that night in Buffalo. Toronto Argonauts home games are never the lead item on newscasts in Toronto, and they're often not even mentioned on the sportscast. And, you know, I'm a diehard CFL fan, diehard Toronto Argonauts fan, and there are thousands of us, but there are also millions of people in this market that don't even know the Canadian Football League exists.
Wow.
And I think that is in some ways the biggest challenge. It's the CFL's big in smaller centers out west. It's the biggest thing in Winnipeg. It's the biggest thing in Regina, Saskatchewan. It's big even in Hamilton, just down the street from here in Southern Ontario. But in a big market like Toronto, Vancouver, and Montreal, it gets dwarfed not only by, you know, the other professional sports teams in those markets, but by the big, mighty NFL.
Is it that, you know, for in a market like Vancouver, are we kind of dwarfed a little bit by the fans and the media of Seattle and the Seahawks and then Buffalo here? Is it, you know, how much do those teams in Buffalo, and I'll use Minnesota, all the other border towns, you know, how much do they kind of clutter the media environment in those markets?
I think the Bills are the biggest of all of those. I think Buffalo really is firmly ensconced in the sporting culture, such as it is of Southern Ontario. I think it's quite big in Vancouver with Seattle, but Winnipeg is the healthiest market in Canada for the Canadian Football League, and I don't think you could say that the Vikings represent a massive threat there. The Bills do represent a massive threat to the Toronto Argonauts, and to a lesser extent, we see the same with the Seahawks and the Lions in Vancouver.
Paul, there's a new partnership between the Bills and the Argonauts that we're going to dig into with you fairly deeply in a moment. I've been told over the years, anecdotally, by people that the NFL is very respectful of the CFL's place in, you know, in the Canadian sporting scene and in Canadian culture, and that the NFL treads carefully so as to not smother the CFL. I've been told that. Is there truth to that?
It certainly is less than it used to be. It definitely was the case, say, 30, 40 years ago. You may not know, the NFL essentially kept the Canadian Football League alive in the mid-1990s. The league was on the verge of going out of business. And a cash infusion from the NFL, which was a drop in the bucket, almost like a rounding error on the books of the NFL, helped keep the Canadian Football League alive for a few years. There certainly was a belief at one time that it was convenient for the NFL to have the Canadian Football League alive because it helped them deal with antitrust issues, that they could say, look, there is a competitive situation. We're not a monopoly. As we've gone from Pete Rozelle to Paul Tagliabue to Roger Goodell, the deferential treatment has diminished. Rozelle would always say nice things about the CFL. Tagliabue, it was less pronounced, but it was still pretty cooperative. I call it sort of uneasy coexistence now. Roger Goodell certainly hasn't ruled out the NFL coming to international markets, and I believe they would look at Canada as one of them, although I don't actually think it would be the first place they would look. I think they're going to look to Europe before they look to Canada. Having the CFL around is it's convenient in the sense it's a good place for players to sort of ply their trade after college. And some of them every year go from Canada down to the NFL. And there've been a few very big success stories. Buffalo Bills fans remember Doug Flutie, of course. I mean, he had eight phenomenal seasons in Canada. He probably the greatest player in the history of the Canadian Football League. And he was getting up there in years, but he was still good enough to go down and be a star for the Bills, and kept going in the NFL for 6 or 7 seasons. Cameron Wake came to the CFL out of college and became a star for 2 years, and then he went down and became a pass rushing fiend for the Miami Dolphins. You see a little bit of that every year. We're also now starting to see an exodus of Canadian talent down to the NFL, including even coming out of Canadian colleges. I think the NFL views the CFL as they don't really want to put the CFL out of business. I think that's reasonable to say, but I don't think the NFL is going to take any steps to stop the Buffalo Bills from asserting that Toronto and Southern Ontario is part of their market. And I think that's actually part of the deal you alluded to that we'll be talking about. The CFL would love to grow its business, and the NFL makes it very hard to do that.
Well, and Paul, I want to take a step back real quick. There was a time when the CFL did have teams in the United States. I believe you would know better than I as the historian, but I do recall Baltimore was one of the markets.
Baltimore was one, yeah.
And
Yeah,
how
Baltimore
did
was the
that?
biggest one and the only Grey Cup championship ever won by a team outside of Canada.
Classic. And then what were the other two markets? And then the second part of that question is, what was ultimately the downfall of that expansion?
Well, there actually were about seven markets, I think, in total. They started in Sacramento, California, with one franchise. They were in Sacramento, San Antonio, Texas, Las Vegas, Shreveport, Louisiana, Baltimore, Memphis, Birmingham. All of those cities had teams for 1 or 2 years. The downfall was. There's a lot of reasons for it. Part of it was a desperate cash grab, and they picked some pretty bad owners who really didn't have the kind of money that they needed. Although they also had some incredibly wealthy owners. The guy that was the founder of Federal Express was owned a team in Memphis, and he had plenty of money. But what essentially happened, I think it's fair to say, is that it was kind of an interesting novelty in June, July, August, and then September comes, Friday nights become high school football, Saturday nights become college football, and Sunday, of course, becomes NFL. And attendance just plummeted in many of those cities as soon as we got to Labor Day. It's perceived widely as a giant failure, this 3 years of expansion into the US. But what it did was it kept the CFL alive when it desperately needed money. And those owners did bring in some money to the league when it needed them. I look at it as ultimately a success, even though we were not able to establish a beachhead and keep the teams down there. There were issues with the sizes of the fields and stuff. We play on a really big field, as you know, and we play with 12 men instead of 11. And fitting in a Canadian football field into places like Legion Field in Memphis and the stadium in Birmingham was pretty tricky. Those end zones were way too small by our standards.
To give a reference, sports fans in general would get. It looks more like by size, like a soccer field, a soccer pitch.
Or rugby pitch.
Yeah, rugby pitch. Yeah. I was telling John, because I was just at a Hamilton Tiger Cats game the other night against the Blue Bombers, what a fun game to watch, the CFL is. And I've been to a Grey Cup, Paul. So I've seen not a lot of Canadian football, but enough to say it'd be good to go up sometime. And John, maybe I feel like I'm asking John to go to sporting events with me almost every week at this point.
I love the fact that we have the CFL historian. So who better to ask? But dating back to the origins of the league, you know, why the different rules? And has there been discussions of kind of integrating rules from one league to the other? Just kind of give our listeners, our viewers, some background on why the different rules and where, you know, where those originated from.
I can't really explain to you why we ended up with 12 men instead of 11, why we have three downs instead of four, why we have a bigger field. I will tell you that, I mean, Canadian football started, I think it's fair to say it started before it started in the United States. I mean, my favorite team, the Toronto Argonauts, have been playing football under that name, under the name of the Toronto Argonauts, since 1873. We had our 150th birthday a couple of years ago. The Hamilton Tiger Cats, they claim to be around since 1869, but in fact, it was the Hamilton Tigers, and it was a merger of the Tigers and the Hamilton Wildcats in 1950 that led to the Tiger Cats. So we have a bit of a playful rivalry between the two teams about which is older. But I mean, we've been awarding a championship trophy called the Grey Cup since 1909. You know, we had our 100th Grey Cup championship in 2012. The NFL just recently had its 50th Super Bowl. So we're way ahead of you guys in that regard. The rules have always been different. There has been occasional talk over the years, and sometimes it comes out of the mouths of people in positions of power in the Canadian Football League that maybe we should go to four downs, and maybe one of the things holding us back from popularity in our own marketplace is the fact that we're weird, that we don't have 11 men and four downs, and we have the field so big, and these other differences that Canadian football purists all love and want to uphold. Some people say, you know, if we were to you know, adopt American rules, go to four men, four downs, go to 11 men, go to a fair catch on punts and all of that stuff, we would be essentially become, you know, even less of a competitive threat or even less of a viable product, because then we would be the second rate version of American football. Right now, people say this is the best version of three-man football on the planet. As Tim said, in particular, having been to a couple of games, it's an entertaining product as it is. It's different. It's not, both brands of football are fun and entertaining. I actually think that if you were to go back 30 years ago, 35 years ago, Canadian football was far more entertaining than the NFL was. That's back in the days when the NFL was heavy on running, you know, running the ball 4 yards in a cloud of dust. Right. Now, you know, the NFL has adopted all of the things that made the CFL so spectacular, you know, multiple wide receiver spreads, highly precise passing attacks. It's funny, the CFL at one time was highly competitive with the NFL. You go back to the 1950s, some Heisman Trophy winners spurned the NFL to come to Canada. Even in the 1970s, we were stealing away talent. I mean, Joe Theismann signed with the Toronto Argonauts out of Notre Dame. Johnny Rogers, the ordinary superstar out of Nebraska, came to the Montreal Alouettes. Buffalo fans will remember, the older Buffalo fans of my vintage will remember Tom Cousineau. I think he was the first overall draft pick by the NFL, by the Buffalo Bills. He went to the Montreal Alouettes instead. Vince Ferragamo came to the Montreal Alouettes after leading the Rams to a Super Bowl game. For a while there, they were competitive, at least the big cities, Toronto and Montreal, were competitive on salary with the NFL. The Argos stole away Terry Metcalf after he led the NFL in all-purpose yardage. Wow. But then the USFL came along in 83, and suddenly the salaries in the NFL went way up, and now there's just a giant difference. The two leagues are nowhere near in the same stratosphere. You know, an entire team in Canada, the payroll, the salary cap is about $5.5 million for the entire team. You've got quarterbacks in the NFL that are making 10 times that just for the one position.
My advice to the CFL, I wouldn't jump into changing your rules to be consistent with the NFL, because every year or so, the NFL changes its rules. So whether
it'd be like chasing the tail.
Yeah. But I've always, from what I've heard, Tim, and you've been to a few, just a little bit more of that kind of that pinball excitement.
Oh, it's fun! Yeah, it's so fun. And I would like to see more American fans, US-based fans, who are somewhere near a CFL city, pop across the border and go check it out. And I mean, anecdotally, do you know, does that happen much?
I don't think it happens a lot. I wish it did. I mean, you've crossed over to Hamilton. It's not a long drive. It's a charming stadium. It's a really fun place to watch a football game. Spectacular sight lines, really close to the action. If American fans ever do come up and see a game, they typically find it incredibly entertaining, and they'd love to come back. And by the way, for both of you guys, if and when you ever do decide to come, I'd love to host you. I hope you make it sometime.
Absolutely.
I'm up for that.
And you know, I love the Hamilton market and obviously Toronto. So that sounds like a great road trip.
Yeah. And at the risk of saying something that'll be known to every one of our Canadian listeners, the Hamilton Stadium, it'll remind you of, a little bit of the Buffalo Bills Stadium in the sense that it's this wide open concrete ball. But it'll also give you a little sense of Wrigley Field because it's nestled right in just the middle of a neighborhood, which makes finding parking if you don't know where you're going a little more challenging. but it's the coolest experience. You're walking through residential neighborhoods on your way to a Ticats game, everybody dressed in Ticats jerseys, face paint.
It's a fun place to go watch a game, no question. And it's a big deal. When the Ticats have a home game, it's a big deal in Hamilton.
Yeah, what is the capacity, seating capacity of that stadium?
It's funny. The CFL's sort of right-sized its stadiums in recent years. So Hamilton Stadium is about 25,000 max. Toronto plays at BMO Field, which for football configuration is about 27,000. The better size for Canadian football is sort of in the 25 to 33,000 range. Winnipeg Blue Bombers have a very new stadium, last 5 or 6 years, 33,000 capacity. Regina, about the same. Edmonton still has a 60,000 seater, but they don't open up the upper deck anymore. And they're trying to make it more intimate with about 30,000 in the lower bowl. If you could consistently draw 25,000 in this league, you can make a profit. The Argos haven't been able to get to that number. They're in a 27,000 seat stadium and they're averaging well below 20 since they moved there in 2016. They're the most challenged franchise. As I say, they're the one that's dearest to my heart. The biggest market and the most attendance challenges in the league. But it's a fantastic place to watch a game. And even if there's only 14,000 people in that building, as there were the other night, it is a fantastic atmosphere, amazing sight lines, loud crowd. Anybody that goes to an Argo game would have to love the spectacle of it.
A few episodes back on Skin in the Game, we had the commissioner, Ryan Creelan, on from the East Coast Hockey League. And it's funny, similar conversation. In some of these smaller markets, like Kalamazoo, they're the only game in town, and the building is, they're rocking with 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 people. But then you also have teams in bigger markets, major league markets, like Cincinnati and like Orlando, where they struggle because while they have 5-6 million people that might live in the market, they're competing with the other major league teams, and they're not as successful as some of these smaller markets where really they're the only game in town.
Regina, where the Saskatchewan Roughriders play, they are the only pro sports venture in that entire province. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers do have the Winnipeg Jets, but I would say the Bombers are as big of a deal as the Jets are. It gets a little bit more problem, and Hamilton with the Tiger Cats is the same. It starts to get a bit more problematic out in the Alberta markets. Calgary and Edmonton have obviously hockey teams, the Oilers and the Flames, who are bigger than the Elks and the Stampeders. Vancouver's got the Canucks and also, of course, has the Seahawks. Montreal's got the Canadiens, who, of course, are massive, and Ottawa's got a hockey team. And then you've got Toronto, which has the Leafs, the Raptors, Major League Baseball team, Major League Soccer, which, of course, Vancouver and Montreal also have. It's this market in particular is the most challenged, partly because it's got the most competition for sporting. And then Toronto, it's like New York City. I mean, there's like an equivalent of Broadway here. There's a lot of theater every night in the city of Toronto. Every major musical act in the world comes through Toronto, and they play in big venues. Any given Argo game, there might be a Blue Jays game happening 2 miles away, and there might be a concert happening at an amphitheater, a 5-minute walk from the stadium, and another concert happening at the hockey arena. And then you've got, the Lion Kings going on downtown and other things like that. The competition for the entertainment dollar is massive here.
So, Paul, great segue. Thank you. Because we want to talk to you about the Argos Buffalo Bills partnership. Depending when people are listening or watching this program, this is a partnership that was announced in the last few weeks, maybe a little further back. And, when you look at the press release, it talks about things like co-branding merchandise, Argos having a presence and Bills having a presence at each other's games. Doug Flutie, a guy you already brought up, famous Argo, famous Bill. Like you're gonna see him there. Jim Kelly, again, depending when people are taking in this episode, Jim Kelly, the former Bills quarterback, the Hall of Fame quarterback, is gonna be at an Argos game in early October of 2025. Tracy McGrady and Vince Carter, two legendary Raptors who, of course, are now retired from the NBA and investors in the Buffalo Bills. Their names are in here. So what do you make of the partnership? What do you know about it?
Well, I would characterize it sort of more as an MLSE Bills partnership rather than an Argos and Bills partnership. I mean, obviously, MLSE owns the Argonauts, and the announcement was done at the Argonaut Stadium with Argonaut players and executives there and Bills people there. One of the promoting factors was let's grow the sport of football in this market, which is a really good and important initiative. It could stand to be grown for sure. I kind of think this is done more to benefit MLSE and the Bills than the Argonauts. If there may be some collateral benefit to the Argonauts, if in fact interest in football does grow, if somehow as a result of this partnership, the Argonauts become better known within their own market, that'd be a great thing. It remains to be seen if it's going to happen. In a way, it's a bit of like, if you can't beat them, join them. Like, I mean, the NFL is a massive, giant, successful sport marketing venture. So getting sort of MLSE attaching itself to that makes a lot of sense. From the Bills standpoint, I think it makes a ton of sense because they've now, I think, very firmly established that Toronto is Bills territory. So if anybody comes along later and says, hey, we want to put an expansion franchise in Toronto, the owners of the Bills are going to be able to say, that's our market. We'll see what it does to the Argos. I'm as a giant fan of the Argos, and I like the Bills, I really do. But I'd have no interest in buying co-branded merchandise. I would love it if somehow, as a result of this, some people from Western New York or even from the parts of Southern Ontario down near Western New York that don't pay much attention to the CFL, if they started coming to Tiger Cats games and Argo games, that'd be amazing. I'm gonna wait and see on that one.
Yeah, it seems to me that this partnership is both offensive and defensive for the Bills. And what I mean by that, offensive obviously gives them the ability to have a home market that's 9 million people, right, versus 1 million. But so offensively, but defensively, Paul, I think it's exactly what you alluded to. You know, it gives them that kind of security blanket that Toronto is Buffalo's market, because 15-20% of the Bills season ticket holders are coming from Southern Ontario.
Yeah, and the Bills now under two ownership groups, the Pagulas and way back, 10 years back and before that, under Ralph Wilson, have been really coming at the Toronto market in very creative and consistent ways, as they should. It's an incredibly large market that exponentially, expands the Bills' reach in terms of market size.
Right. And my question, and maybe Paul or maybe Tim, you'd know this too, how far does that extend, right? Does that extend up into, Montreal as well? Is that Bill's country? I mean, how far?
It's Marv Levy country, I can tell. Marv Levy is a site. Well, Paul, you know this, but for people out there watching and listening, Marv Levy, the Bills Hall of Fame coach, is also the Montreal Alouettes Hall of Fame, CFL Hall of Fame coach. I don't know that there's a lot of Bills fans in Montreal, though.
No, but yeah. We'll see how far they can extend, you know, Bills Nation, right?
Yeah. Do you know, Paul, though? I mean, do you have a sense of, how far does a Bills fandom reach into Canada?
Well, I mean, I personally know a couple of people in Ottawa who are season ticket holders for the Bills.
All right. We'll take it.
So my guess would be that they're the most popular team in this part of Southern Ontario. I mean, I think as you get down towards London and Windsor, there'd probably be more fans for the Lions. You know, part of it is sort of what people saw on TV back in the days when there wasn't cable, right? In the 60s and early 70s, you could get Cleveland broadcasts and you could get Buffalo broadcasts. And so there's still a lot of Browns fans actually in this market. But, you know, the funny thing is, you talked, John, about the sort of the NFL. Why wouldn't you want to look at a market this size? And I get that. But, you know, the funny thing is the NFL's already kind of got it captured in a way, right? I mean, there are thousands of Pittsburgh Steelers fans in Toronto, and there are thousands of Dallas Cowboys fans and Miami Dolphins fans and Green Bay Packers. You know, the NFL, it's almost like they've got the market cornered so well, they don't really need to become focused around one team. I think the NFL has recently adopted a strategy where they've sort of said certain teams can kind of claim parts of Canada for their turf. And I think Minnesota has kind of claimed, you know, part of the prairies. And I think Seattle's claimed the lower mainland and British Columbia. And now the Bills, of course, have claimed Southern Ontario. It's interesting that the Bills have gone into partnership with MLSE, and they don't seem to have a similar partnership with the Hamilton Tiger Cats, who are actually closer geographically. And so it'll be interesting to watch how things unfold with that. But yeah, I think you're right, John. I think it's both offensive and defensive. And if it helps the Argonauts in some way, maybe through the long game of getting more kids playing flag football and touch football, and if kids are going out to events that have Bills players coaching them, but also have Argos players coaching them, and then they find out, hey, you can go to an Argos game for $25. Dad, I want to go. And maybe long term, the MLSE can build up a new fan base of young people for whom a Bills game isn't going to be affordable, particularly in that new stadium. And it is obviously a bit of a distance to get there. Whereas if you're growing up in Toronto and you're playing flag football and you just went to a practice and there was an Argo receiver there helping you catch passes, you want to go see him play next Friday night. Hey, Dad, can we go? That could work, right? I mean, I think that may be part of it from MLSE's standpoint. But I think a lot of it, frankly, is MLSE will see it as a revenue opportunity with the merchandise. And, you know, there are parts of it that do seem a little, I'm going to say, annoying to Argo fans. You know, one of the announcements that you probably saw, Tim, in the big announcement was there's going to be Buffalo Bills viewing parties at Real Sports, which is the big sports bar owned by MLSE. Well, where's the Argo viewing parties when they're on the road? MLSE's not bothering with that.
Flag football was one of the kind of the cornerstone activations around this partnership. But my question, as I look to Tim, who, as you may not know, Paul, is a big flag football guy, are they playing three downs or four?
Oh, they're playing four. Yeah, Paul, you'll appreciate this. I coach a flag football team here. Our toughest competition are the teams from Canada by a long shot. There's an organization in Welland, Ontario that is, I mean, they are training these kids to play at such a high level. And yes, it's four downs.
Okay.
And way too often we've been four downs and out. So there we go.
Well, listen, we've got flag football coming up in the Olympics in Los Angeles in 3 years. And I think there's a strong expectation up here that Canada is going to compete for a medal. We may not be able to win the gold, particularly if any NFL players get involved there. But we got some pretty good talent up in Canada. And it'll be interesting to see how they put the team together, whether they'll use professionals or whether they'll just sort of go for super duper flag football players, because there are some of those as well. You know, just to get back to one point I want to quickly make, I know we've got to wrap, but I wonder how much of this partnership that was announced has to do with the growing cross-border tensions. You know, there's a lot of Canadians who do not want to cross the border and do not want to buy American products right now because of Donald Trump's threats to make Canada the 51st state and all the, you know, the imposition of tariffs that is damaging our economy as well as economies around the world. Going to a Bills game means you've got to cross that border. And I'm assuming the usual people that would have crossed the border 2 days ago or yesterday, whenever the last Bills home game was, still did it. But I wonder if that could be part of what's at play here, to sort of give them additional incentives or inducements to not go away, the way tourism from Canadians down into the U.S. has really been hampered over the last few months.
Well, Paul, John is the marketing and sponsorships guy. He did that for four big league sports teams. And let me bounce Paul's point, John, off of you. If I'm the Buffalo Bills, yeah, I want those ticket holders coming into the new stadium, of course. But I also want the suite holders, sponsors. They need new business out of Canada.
Absolutely. You know, the Bills will not have trouble filling seats. But a market of this size does have trouble filling up suites, club seats, as well as driving national, and in this case, international sponsorship dollars. So it's that corporate money that they, you know, we're at a deficit because of the market size and the Fortune 500 companies. So I do think, Paul, I think you are onto something, that it's also a strategic decision to remove some of that quote unquote elbows up mentality, right?
Yeah, and it would be interesting to watch to see if the Bills, where they kind of find those sponsorships from Canada. For example, we've got a lot of really big banks based in Toronto, and you know, a lot of them, their names are on arenas even in the United States, like, you know, TD Garden in Boston and places like that, if that's what it's still called. But I think if a Canadian, major Canadian bank were to suddenly be announced as a Buffalo Bills sponsor and owner of a suite, there'd be some backlash, because Canadians right now are just not feeling very friendly toward what had been our greatest neighbor and friend for 150 odd years. Maybe over time those tensions will cool. We'll have to see how things unfold. But yes, I think that they probably, I think you're right, John. I think they're going to have to get more than just people to sit in those seats. They're going to have to get people to sit in those suites.
Right.
And for that, you need bigger dollars. And there's a lot of dollars in the Toronto market for sure.
Well, we will keep an eye on that. And Paul, you hit the hot button topic that John and I, and, you know, at this point, a whole lot of guests have talked about with the cross-border relations. And Paul, we'll have to have you back to chat more about that and chat more Canadian football. And John, I'm ready to take Paul up on the offer.
Absolutely.
Of an Argos game, too.
Know, I mean, I'm all for, yeah, let's extend the olive branch as to our best friends and neighbors up north. Let's head up to a CFL game, and we encourage all of our listeners on both sides of the border to do that.
The opening game of the season for the Bills, of course, was this incredible fourth quarter comeback. And the Argonauts just had an incredible fourth quarter comeback a couple of days ago. The same game ended on a last second walk-off field goal. Yeah, we've got two really entertaining teams in these markets, and I'm not trying to take anything away from the Hamilton Tiger Cats, who are also very entertaining. So yes, I hope we can do it. I'd love to watch a game with you guys. We could compare and contrast the two sports and celebrate them for what they both are.
You got it. Well, Paul, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. Love doing it, guys.
Thanks, Paul.
Awesome.
Appreciate it.
See you soon. We'll be back right after this.
Corey here with the Compact Civics Expansion Pack.
America is such a big, wide, awesome place, and to be able to see things that are representative of so many different places, it can be so important when brought to your tiny town.
Everybody is so kind and loving. I'm here in Buffalo just because of Stage Buffalo.
From urban farms to rural fairs, we'll celebrate spaces that bring us together and create community.
Watch on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From your morning commute to quiet evenings at home, Buffalo Toronto Public Media is always there with trusted news, inspiring stories, and timeless music. It's your connection to a world of wonder. This is Public Media.
Hey, welcome back to Skin in the Game. And Tim, thank you for bringing in Paul Woods, CFL historian. Super, super interesting conversation.
It's funny. I entered the conversation with a misbelief right away, which is, if you're in Canada, you probably know about the CFL, and we're going to try not to bore you by getting too elementary with it. But from what Paul said, it sounds like there's a whole lot of sports fans in Canada who, for a variety of reasons, haven't you know, necessarily right. absorb the details of the game. So I hope it was as interesting for everybody as it was for us.
You know, there's a lot of first generation Toronto residents who maybe didn't grow up in or around the CFL. So, and then the expansion of Major League Soccer and all the other entertainment, it sounds like the Argos are still always kind of looking to introduce themselves to former as well as potentially new fans.
You know, and it's interesting when we talk about market size, which we do almost every week on this program, it would seem like being in a large market like Toronto would be the ideal, right? Even, you know, because just think of it this way.
7 million residents,
yeah,
right?
So there's, you know, there's enough sports fans to go around, and there's certainly enough money to go around and afford tickets at any level, including CFL, which is, you know, far less expensive than the major league sports. But cutting through the noise and getting people to pay attention to you, that's tougher, right? It's the attention economy.
It's, you know, when I went to Los Angeles to market the NHL and the Kings, oh, wow, this is great. Cleveland had 3 million residents and LA has 8 million. This will be easy to fill up a building. It was the opposite because, yes, your share of voice and so many other options, you know, including the beach or the restaurants or every other team in town. So, yeah, it is harder to break through that clutter and make noise in a big, big market.
Right. And then, you know, you take a market the size of Hamilton, Ontario, which is roughly the size of Buffalo, the city, not Western New York or the region. And the Ticats, the Tiger Cats, the market penetration that football team has in Hamilton, huge. And it really, when you go there for a game, it'll remind you of Buffalo. Not watching on TV, probably not going around the city. You're not going to necessarily see people in Ticats, you know, gear everywhere like you would Bills Mafia in Buffalo. But when you're going to the game and you're in that neighborhood, you absolutely see it.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal. Well, I was also very interested to learn that the CFL actually predates the National Football League.
So I'm a fan of Paul's writing, and he's written a couple of great books. He wrote about that in one of them. It's a book called Year of the Rocket, when the Argos signed Rocket Ismail to, you know, instead of going to the NFL. Back in 1991 to come to Toronto, gave him the fattest contract ever given to a pro football player in any league. So there's a little bit of Argos history in the book. And yeah, I was surprised. We're talking the origins of baseball or around the same time as the origins of the Toronto Argonauts.
Right. Well, and I did give Paul a challenge. Sometimes it's always fun to stump a historian.
Yeah, you did stump him on this
one. You know, the origins of the rules of the game, right? You know, the baseball and had some origins to, you know, to maybe cricket. Rugby came out of soccer when someone actually just picked up the ball and he was tackled, he or she was tackled. You know, American football kind of evolved from rugby in some ways. But it's interesting that the sport of, you know, CFL, where the origins of their rules, right? It's three downs and constant motion and, quite frankly, a bigger field.
Yeah, with the field goal uprights in the field of play. It's at the front of the end zone. So imagine you're a wide receiver and they, by the way, 12 people on the field, there's another receiver out there. You're one of those receivers running into the end zone. And they're used to this, but you got to watch out for those uprights because they're going to be smack in the middle of the front of the end zone.
I'm surprised that the NFL Players Association hasn't wanted to adopt the CFL rules because that would actually have one more salaried player on the field.
Job creation.
That's right, job creation.
I wonder if the NFL at any point has considered trying to work with the CFL to create a farm system of sorts for players and for coaches. There have been some great NFL players and a lot of really solid ones who have come out of the CFL, and some great coaches too. Marv Levy, who had coached in the NFL and who had coached at the college level. But Marv Levy's great success before the Buffalo Bills was with the Montreal Alouettes, which is why he is a Canadian Football League Hall of Famer.
Right. You know, I was thinking the same thing too, but it sounds to me as if the CFL doesn't want to be seen as a secondary league, as a developmental league. And you know something? Right now with the political climate, I don't think we're going to see the CFL taking a back seat to the NFL, at least with their ownership groups.
I completely agree. That's why even as I was saying the idea out loud here, I self-corrected, because I know that wouldn't happen now. The idea, and I apologize if I did this too, might even be offensive to say out loud, but thinking like the NFL thinks, if the NFL had one brain, but
right.
Over time, over decades, I do wonder if, you know, if the conversations looked like that at some point, because I could certainly see it at least being, you know, a thought exercise.
Yeah, I think it could have happened, and it was interesting, quite frankly, that it didn't when Paul was talking about the potential years back of kind of an XFL merger or partnership with the CFL, and then truly create an international spring league. Because between the UFL and the XFL and the, you know, all the other kind of spring leagues, they've really started and stopped. Don't see it happening in the short term.
No. The CFL is a great game and it's a great league. Here's hoping it can stay what it is with more fans coming in. It's affordable. It is fun. I keep coming back to it. It's fun to watch. Not that the NFL isn't. You know, it's kind of cool to have, you know, different leagues out there. And yes, we can include, you know, in the former, what was formerly called the XFL, and way, way, way back the USFL. They have different variations on the game of football. But in a crowded marketplace, it can be tough to pull off.
Yeah. Well, just to wrap this up, I think the last thing that was really interesting in doing that deep dive was, you know, how the affiliation partnership between Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment and the Buffalo Bills could potentially help the Argonauts. So there's a big unknown there, but there is some potential there.
I hope it does. And I really think, and this is my bigger takeaway, that it could be helpful for the Buffalo Bills. It certainly will not hurt the Buffalo Bills. And, you know, John, I'm saying this because, you know, I've covered this for probably about as long as you've lived in Buffalo, and for the Buffalo News, and before that for Business First newspaper in Buffalo. The amount of times I've written about the Bills' efforts to penetrate that Canadian market, it cannot be overstated how valuable this region, because they look at it as one, as they should, can be for the Buffalo Bills. But Paul anecdotally, struck at the heart of the challenge there. Along with border issues and currently political issues, you've got a lot of Cowboys fans, you've got Browns fans, you've got Steelers fans. That is not a Buffalo Bills dominant fan base. Now, again, if you're selling sponsorships, if you're selling, you know, premium tickets, you're not looking to capture tens of thousands of people in Southern Ontario. You're looking for the corporations and the fans with the money to spend.
Right, right.
A niche audience that you know better than anyone, John, is a valuable audience and vital for the Buffalo Bills, especially going into a new stadium.
Absolutely. Again, 7 million person market, you know, six times or so the size of Buffalo. So, you know, it really makes strategic sense. And with that, we want to thank Paul Woods for a great conversation on the CFL. And also thank you for tuning in to Skin in the Game. And remember, you know, whether you're a fan of a team or a fan of sports or just a resident of this region, we all have skin in the game. This is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Thanks for listening.